Hello, and welcome to another edition of InfraLogic's Crossroads podcast. I am Gene Gilligan, InfraLogic senior reporter. My guest today is Jason Koenig, co-founder and managing partner of ITE Management. Since 2014, ITE Management has acquired transportation and industrial assets for its investors. ITE works closely with operators who build, manage, and service these assets to better optimize their performance. Jason, welcome to the Crossroads podcast.
Thanks, Gene. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Jason, first of all, tell us a little about your background and your role at ITE.
Well, I grew up in the Midwest, where we were familiar with a lot of transportation, obviously the automotive industry, but we saw a lot of rail cars, chassis, and trailers, and certainly airplanes going all over the place. But prior to starting this, I did deep distress buyouts, which is really a focus on balance sheet and cash flow. And over time, I started migrating toward low volatility assets and a real focus on cash flow, but really the same thing, balance sheet and cash flow, only with a very low volatility. Post-financial crisis, this was around 2011 and 2012, Gene, when everybody's eyes were shifting towards San Francisco with the new apps coming out and the new iPads were slowly moving into the mainstream. We started looking again toward the center of the country, and we saw these fabulous operating assets that really nobody was paying attention to at the time. And we thought that they were unique in both financial and operating respects. And the uniqueness was really that they generated a tremendous amount of cash. It was very low volatility. It was inflation correlated, and it wasn't really correlated to anything else. They were supremely downside protected and very tax efficient. The rub is that they're really operating assets, so you really need to know how to operate them. And so we started focusing on that because we thought they were super interesting. We couldn't find a way to gain institutional exposure, and we thought if we liked it and it was hard to find, then maybe other people would like it as well, and we could provide that access point for them.
Discuss ITE Management investment philosophy and the type of transportation assets it focuses on.
So ITE, as you highlighted, stands for Industrial Transportation Equipment. We view ourselves today as the leading transportation infrastructure owner and operator. We own 350,000 and counting discrete assets, and those assets run the gamut from rolling stock or rail cars, as you see them running around the country. We have built one of the largest freight rail operating platforms called American Industrial Transport. We call it intermodal, which is chassis, trailers, containers. And then it's also aviation and specialty aviation, which includes commercial airplanes, jet engines, aviation lending, helicopters, and finally, ports and transloading facilities that kind of touch all of these points. And the key amongst all of these assets are the characteristics I highlighted in the opening, which is that it's incredibly low volatility, great cash flow. It's contracted cash flow. So think about it like your automobile lease. It's inflation correlated. It's downside protected and really a wonderfully defensible operating asset with cash flow.
Please discuss how real assets, data, and mobility are intersecting and how that impacts ITE Management's investment philosophy.
Gene, it's a great question. All of our assets, the rolling stock, the intermodal, chassis, trailers, containers, the specialty aviation, the commercial aviation, these are all real operating assets. And these are assets that, as I like to say, you can't own and operate with a screen and a phone. As clever as we might think we are sitting in New York, you need real people that are touching, managing, and working on these assets every day. ITE Management, we own dozens of facilities all over North America with several thousand people that are working on it and managing those assets every day. So our platform focuses, number one, on operations. And that operations is critical. In fact, in some respects, I would view ITE as a quasi-asset management firm, quasi-strategic operating platform. So we lead with operations. But what does operations really mean? To us, it means visibility. And that visibility is how to extract greater value, how to make those assets more predictable, how to work closer with your customers, but also how to create deal flow. So one of our tent poles is operations. It's probably our most important tent pole. Our second tent pole is portfolio management and construction. So our assets touch over 1,500 different counterparties. We touch over 525 different subsectors of the global economy. We have over 40 broad categories of different types of assets, and they're all ranging from brand new to almost 50 years old. And so with those assets, we can create a wonderful latticework of cash flow streams with just a little bit of risk points at any given time. So we've got operations, we've got portfolio management and construction, And then we also have data and information. And we've been collecting data and information from our assets since our inception in 2011 and 2012, well before folks started focusing on information. And so what it allows us to do is build up a pretty unique, and I hate to use this word, but bespoke database. We create kind of a virtuous cycle. The more assets we have, the longer we run them, the more information we get. And it allows us to both better manage our assets, understand our assets and our counterparties, and also it creates predictive value. So those are the three primary tentpoles that we work with to create value for our investors.
In 2025, ITE reached an agreement to acquire the chassis business of Milestone Equipment Holdings, and that brought 36,000 chassis and Milestone's chassis team to ITE. Please talk about this transaction and what were the drivers to ITE in making this deal?
It's a great question. So one of our operators within ITE helped build some of the largest chassis and trailer companies globally. So we're deeply embedded within the industry. The way that we acquire assets and ultimately build platforms is we first find those great operators, and then we start slowly acquiring assets. And as we start reaching critical mass, we start then looking for platforms to enhance value and manage those assets more and more. We really like the chassis and trailer and intermodal space, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but we had been acquiring those assets for a while. We actually have a platform already, and we found the Milestone platform to be highly accretive to that platform, and we have a couple others in mind as we continue to grow. Why are we growing? I'm going to jump a little bit to more of a macro theme, but as we look at the geopolitics with a focus on domestic production within North America, as well as the tariff regime, we can look for, and this gets back to our discussion about mobility and infrastructure, we can look for more and more production throughout the United States over time. What you're wearing today, Gene, the microphones we're speaking into, the computers that we're talking through, the food that we eat, at some point, nearly all of that touches or is moved on a chassis or a trailer. We think that we're building one of the great platforms to help continue building out this great American story as our economy continues to evolve with a focus more and more on domestic production and moving goods and services around North America.
Speaking of that, how do you account for the tariff situation that's been going up and down and not so much certainty around the tariffs that have been leveled and then withdrawn? How do you account for that in your investments?
It's a great question. I'm going to start first with a little bit of a broad answer, and then I'm going to narrow it in a little bit. So about half a decade ago, we started identifying trends, both the domestic market and the global market. The first trend was that supply chains and infrastructure were too thin and too prone to single points of failure. So we saw a need for greater flexibility and, in some respects, doubling up. We also saw a shift from, in some respects, a sole source supplier, China, to over 100 countries trying to be part of that global supply chain. We also then saw more and more onshoring. And then finally, we saw a shift of companies wanting to move toward cheaper, safer sources of energy. Now, North America is a big winner in that, but also a lot of Western countries are winners in that regard in many respects. So we started seeing that. Now, the tariff policy has just continued to focus on that trajectory. And in some respects, perhaps it's accelerating it. We don't know just yet. But what's that doing is it's creating a greater shift away from China to more and more countries being part of that supply chain. It's creating a greater shift toward onshoring. So all of these things are trends that we already saw. It may create inflation, and having a big balance sheet and owning a lot of assets, that's great for our investor base. As we mentioned, we have over 350,000 assets. It's over $12 billion of value. If those assets are worth more, that's great for our investors. So from a macro point of view, the tariffs and the trade talk is continuing and pushing the country and the globe on a trend that in some respects already existed. Now, in 2025, we had some very specific events. We had what was called Liberation Day, which was a big tariff regime change that in some respects was unexpected. So from a micro perspective, operating companies and platforms and those that were using supply chains paused for a second because it just created incredible uncertainty. Now, as soon as we started seeing that regime was flexible and that the tariff regime would change and there would be negotiations, companies started focusing on maintaining what they had. But because of that uncertainty, they hesitated on growth. And I think that was probably the story across the board within many industries in 2025. I think now what we're seeing is that companies have started to acknowledge that we're in a regime that will have quite a bit of uncertainty for a while, but business must continue to go on. And so we expect now you'll start to see a little bit more growth as companies position themselves for a changing marketplace. So net-net, we think that tariffs were part of a trend that was ongoing. 2025 was a little surprise and created some uncertainty. Companies are now becoming situated and they're focusing on renewing growth, understanding that the world will shift a little bit over time.
Jason, in 2025, ITE announced a minority investment from funds managed by Blackstone Credit and Insurance. So please talk about how that partnership is going so far and what might be ahead for that.
We are really pleased to have Blackstone Credit Insurance as a partner with an ITE. The reason that we did that partnership, and I think both parties, is that we are an originator. Like, we own great long-term assets that have very predictable cash flow. We do finance those investments using different combinations of asset-backed or unsecured financing. Blackstone Credit Insurance is a big purchaser, and one of their big focuses is more and more asset-backed credit. So together, we can both originate and work really constructively with them to create better asset liability matching and better products that both serve their investor base and our investor base. It's a really fantastic partnership. And to date, this partnership is not even a year old, and we've already done nearly $1 billion of financing. So it's off to a great start. I think also there's been great collaboration between the two of us because we each bring something to the forefront. They obviously are a global brand and a global business with different access points, and we have a lot of expertise around very specific asset classes. So together, we can bring knowledge and they can bring access. And again, it creates a really powerful partnership. All of this gets toward leveraging our operating expertise as well to create more and more optionality for our investors and our counterparties.
So Jason, how do you see transportation infrastructure evolving as an alternative investment? What do you see in the future? I know looking in the crystal ball can be tough, but it'd be great to get your thoughts on that.
When we started ITE about 15 years ago, I think the folks would look at us and say, it's super interesting. I think I need it. I don't have it. And they wanted to learn more. I think nowadays we're finding that infrastructure and transportation assets are becoming more of a core product for investors, particularly institutional investors. So it went from, it's interesting, I've never heard it before, to I think I probably need it. And why do they need it? They need it because we live in an environment of volatility, and that volatility probably won't go away. We are an important part of building a balanced portfolio because we can reduce that volatility through our very predictable contractual cash flow streams that are asset-backed. And we're also dealing with critical assets. If you don't have our assets, you can't function as a company. You can't move goods around. And so what you end up having is a critical asset that's generating a lot of cash flow that has, in some respects, a moat around it because of that operational knowledge and expertise is vitally important to be able to create the most value out of them. And ITE, we're one of the first to start identifying this about 15 years ago. And that first mover advantage, frankly, is an advantage because it allowed us to understand and partner. And today, our view is we want to be that great partner to both limited partners and operators to build out that asset class.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining Crossroads Podcast. It's been a pleasure to speak to you and chat with you about what you see in the marketplace, and there's a lot more ahead.
Thanks, Gene.
Thanks to everyone for listening.